Hey, this is the Beegs.
What's up? This is Victor.
And this is Talk of Fame, a rock and roll podcast.
Is everybody in? Cool. The ride's about to begin. Are you ready, rock and rollers? Enjoy the ride with your Talk of Fame hosts, Victor and the Beegs. Ooh, yeah.
How's it going, Mike?
Going on.
My name is Bobby. Bobby Beegs.
Hi, Bobby.
How's it going?
Good.
Oh, man, shit. It's been what, like freaking
20 years?
20 years, bro.
It's been right? 20 years?
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. It's a long time.
Yeah, man. You know, I'm going to go back before we get started because I want to touch on the history, man. You've got a long history in rock and roll. You're a guitar player. You're an engineer. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I started playing guitar when I was about 8 years old, and my family's musical family, so yeah, started early. And guitar and drums, actually. And then started touring when I was about 20 with projects, usually my own projects. And I don't know. What else?
what were your influences?
My mom's older brother, my Uncle Chuck. Uncle Nate, he's a badass. And, he used to babysit me, and I used to be at his house, and he'd have like a lot of hot girls, and he always had a nice car, and he's always doing gigs, and I thought it was cool. I thought Uncle Nate was cool.
Yeah, so, he played music.
Yeah, he's a guitar player.
In fact,
he bought my first guitar for me when I was 8 years old.
Nice. Oh, that is nice.
So, that's awesome.
So you grew up where?
Columbus, Ohio.
Awesome.
Yep. In fact, he was over here maybe about a month ago, and he said, "I have all this gear, and I have a studio, and all this. I have like 20 guitars in my living room right here." Yeah. And he's like, "I didn't know when I put that guitar in your hand, you were like 7 years old, that it was gonna turn into this."
Wow, so, man, that's freaking awesome.
Yeah. So.
That's awesome.
So you know what, man? I want to tell the listeners. So Mike, him and I, we met at recording school. Now. Mm-hmm. Full disclosure, this podcast is not sponsored by the recording workshop, but I'm going to mention it because that's where you and I met. And we were actually in the same like
group.
Yeah. A group. What they did at the time, I don't know what they do now, is they give you a little test and they find out if you even know what a cable is. And if you didn't know what a cable was, then you'd start with another group. But if you at the very least knew what a cable was and maybe what a preamp was, then they'd put you in another group. So I don't know what level we were, but I know that I knew what a cable was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did I.
You hope.
Yeah, for sure, right? So, you know what? Let's talk a little bit about that, man, because I have some really, really good memories about that time.
So do I.
Tell me.
That's some fun.
Oh, for sure, man.
I want to hear
Bob,
that.
Yeah, I was telling Bob a little earlier because he was asking me, like, what was that like, you know? I said, you know what, man, it was almost like a 24-hour, 24/7 type of thing, because I remember lecture started early in the morning, and then and then after that, I guess we get a break maybe, I forget.
But, yep, we had like lunch break, and then sessions went to like whenever they ended.
That's right.
Kind whenever. Of
like real world, right?
Yeah.
It's a real world, and that's what it's like for all those young engineers out there, man. You guys probably already know, but you know, you're not the only ones. You know, we've been doing that as well. What was your experience like there, man? When you got there, how experienced were you with recording?
I had a bunch of gear in my house. It's a long story, but it's a podcast, so
yeah,
podcasts are made for long stories. So I had a deal with Interscope Records, and I had a publishing deal, and I was sending them songs, and they sounded like crap. And I just wanted to get better at recording. But like it take me like a week to mix down one song, and now it takes a couple of hours, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's like I knew what I wanted to hear, but I just didn't know what knob to turn to make it do that, you know? So,
sure.
And the other thing was, there's a local venue called the Newport Music Hall. It's the like longest continuously running music venue in the country.
Yeah.
Just celebrated its 50th anniversary. And they were building a new venue, and the sound guy there was leaving to go to the new venue. And he said, if you get your certification, you can take my place. It's a really cool job. That's how I met all the people that I met, all the rock stars I met. I met from working there. So basically it was like, there was like 20 stagehands in line waiting to get that job, but they didn't have credentials. So he said, if you get this paperwork, you can like jump over them and take and be right behind me and take my job. He said, in fact, I'll give you my job. So I knew that when I left for the recording workshop, that I had a job waiting on me.
Yeah.
And it was cool because it all worked out perfectly. So I was doing stagehand work on like the weekends we were off, you know, and at the Newport. And then what's crazy is, you know, I came out like top 10% of our class. I was like one of the top 10%, which means you're up for job placement. And I was working as a stagehand at the Newport, and I got job placed at the Newport. So the guy comes down, the production manager comes downstairs. He's like, I said, what are you doing down here? He goes, I'm meeting some guy, man. He's supposed to be our new audio engineer. I said, oh, really? He said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm your new audio engineer.
That's awesome. That's super cool.
So, yeah.
Do you still have your top 10% certificate somewhere?
It's somewhere, man. It's in a box somewhere.
Yeah. I was top 10 as well. How?
Right on.
I have no idea, bro. But I found it a couple years ago, and I don't know where it is now. It's somewhere.
Yeah, I got it in a box somewhere. I know with all my notebooks and stuff, and the book, what's the book called? It's called
Modern
Recording Techniques. That's right.
And you know why I remember, and Bob knows, because Bob was part of this process. A couple of years after that, I got approached by a company. I don't think they're around anymore, especially with technology nowadays. They were called the Recording Connection. Yeah. They would do is they would ask you if you wanted to mentor a young engineer, and they'd pay you, I think, like $100 a class. And it was like 20 classes, I believe. And so I had that book, and then the you know, it was two guys that started mentoring with me, or I should say, you know, coming in and I teach them stuff and whatever. Yeah. And that's the book that they got assigned as well. So we kind of broke it down, but I gotta be honest, man, books and ohms and all that stuff for me, I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. I just kind of go with my ear and whatever.
True story. What's weird about that. At the time I was married with kids. So my wife was like, if you're going to do this, you better kill it. So I ordered that book like maybe a month before I went, and I read it twice before the first day.
Wow.
I read that whole book twice. In fact, it's kind of funny because my buddies call me Manuel Noriega. So he's like, you read every manual. when I get a new piece of equipment, I won't plug it in. I get a new pedal board or a new compressor or something. I'll leave it in the box. I'll read the manual like 2-3 times
before Bob, I plug it in. Because not me, because I just want to get right to it.
Right? They're like, dude, plug it in. Dude, just plug it in. I'm like, I can't, dude. I want to know what it does first. I want to know everything it does.
Well, that's a real engineer, man. The rest of us just push buttons. And just, okay, can you hear? Yeah, I got you.
I got a question. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Victor.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, Biggs, you know, now we know who to call. Like if something's not sounding right, hey, man, call Mike.
Yes.
Dude, I get calls all the time. They're like, dude, my Pro Tools is doing this. I'm like, oh, try this and do this and try that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. Right on. Good
to know. Well, Mike, who was your first national band at that bar or club that you
Newport? Get to? It's an old theater. It used to be the Agora. And it does like mid-level acts, man. And that's kind of how I got on my tours, because like if you're playing the Newport, you're either on your way up or on your way down.
Oh, you know what okay. I
mean? So we had like one of my first tours was Linkin Park. That I was on. It was Linkin Park, Head PE, and Papa Roach.
Nice.
No, it was Head PE, Linkin Park, and POD. That's who it was.
Oh, wow.
And, three bands on their way up. And I was doing monitors, and they were like, who's doing monitors tonight? And I was like, it was me. And they're like, pack your stuff. You're riding with us. I'm like, cool.
Nice.
Yeah. No way. So you just.
Yeah, man. That's how I got every tour I ever got. It was just because I was there. Because, see, listen, these bands can't afford their own monitor guy, or sometimes their own front of house guy. Mm. Sometimes they're like the opener.
Yeah.
And they don't have, they're in a band and trailer still, you know? So if they can't afford their own sound guy, then it's usually the house guy, which is me.
How long was that tour? How long was that first tour for you?
Just a couple months. Because all those guys were moved up to like arenas by the end of the tour,
yeah,
you know?
Sure. So it was at that point, yeah? It was at
that point. It was crazy. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, when we were in school, I remember one of the guys that I think he was one of my roommates, he had a Linkin Park CD. He was like, dude, these guys are new. They're coming up. Check it out. And I remember him playing that. I forget the name of the song.
One Step Closer was the first the first track. Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he was like, they're gonna blow up.
Actually, it was on cassette. It was a cassette.
Okay, yeah. That's
One probably Step Closer, yeah.
Yeah. Cassettes.
Mm-hmm. It was a cassette. Yep. I remember that, dude. I remember it. Oh, but my first band I ever did, so my first day there, when the guy came down and said, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm your new sound guy. So the first show I did was George Clinton, Parliament Funkadelic.
Ooh.
Oh,
yeah, man.
That is so killer.
And that is so rad. That's indicative of like my whole career, man, because this is like jumping off off the high board, you know what I mean? Into the deepest part, you know? It's just crazy. It was like, I mean, I could tell you, we could spend this whole thing just talking about that show, one show. It was crazy. First of all, the tour manager comes to the back door, hands me $2,000, and says, I need 2 ounces of cocaine.
Oh, wow.
That was my first day. My first show.
Damn.
Yeah, I can say that because he's sober now.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
it was crazy. And then I think it was like sound check was at 2 p.m. or something. Doors were at 7. And the tour manager came back to me like an hour later and said, with like another $1,000, I need another ounce. I said, I just gave you 2 ounces, dude. And he goes, it's gone. I was like, it's what? He goes, it's gone.
Yeah.
That's a true story. That's rock and roll.
And here's the weirdest part. That's not the weirdest part. That's probably the weirdest part. I never got the whole band on stage for soundcheck at one time.
Wow.
Because I can never get them all in the same room. So I'd get like the drummer and like one of the horn players. And then I would get Bernie Worrell, the keyboard player. And then I get a backup singer. I'm like, hey, where'd the bass player go? We'll go get him. They would leave to go get him. And then the bass player come out. And then the rest of the band would be MIA.
Wow.
And it was like nine monitor mixes. And It was like 30 channels. It was crazy, dude. It was a lot. It was my first day. After that, every show was easy.
Oh, sure. Oh, for sure, man. You know what? That reminds me, Bob was there at this. There was a venue down the street that, in fact, one of the guys that I mentored through that recording program, we became really good friends, man. He had some gear. I had gear. I took my stuff over to his place. He had this like room in the back of his house. I think it was like a guest house. We turned it into a little studio and, you know, we worked there for a few years, you know, Bob Beegs and I did a few albums for some local bands and stuff. And one day he tells me, hey Vic, listen, man, I'm going to remodel the studio. His dad had like a construction company and he was like an electrician. I'm like, yeah, cool, bro. I'm going to be busy at work because at the time I was running I'm a massage therapist. So I was running a massage therapy school. Yeah, I tried it, man. Life's
a jack of all trades.
But I'm like, cool. He says, and I'm opening a club. And I'm like, right on, man. He says, I want you to come do sound. And I'm like, cool, yeah, bro. We'll check it out. When you're ready, let me know so we can go look at the gear. So probably like 2-3 months go by, man. And he calls me. He's like, hey, we have our grand opening in a couple of days. Come check out the gear. And I'm like, all right. I'd been out of the loop, man, for live gear and stuff. You know, I'd been really rusty. And I walk in. It wasn't a small club, man. I mean, it was a huge venue. I don't know anything about like the speaker arrays hanging from the ceiling and all kinds. Dude, it was nuts. And then he shows me the board and I think it was like a Yamaha. It looked like a freaking spaceship to me, man.
Like the digital joint?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Uh-huh.
And then, so what he did, he went to Mexico and he handpicked a bunch of musicians and performers that were like the top contenders on the Mexican version of The Voice. right?
Oh,
yeah. So here,
Brilliant.
I mean, these guys put on a show, man, and all that. So he comes back and he's like, dude, all right. So we go on and I'm like, all right, cool. We start at 9, right? He's like, no, bro, we start at 11. I'm like, god damn, bro. By that time, I'm already, I'd been out of the loop, right? So we do the first night, man. It's 5 singers, man. It was like a big, really nice show band. Rock and roll, everything from Depeche Mode to Metallica. Mm-hmm. Cover band. But, you know, excellent top singers, man. But they all had in-ears. They all had their own mix. And they're like, hey, Vic, you know, right here in the chorus, can you bring the keyboard to the right and then the kick to the left and just a little bit of guitar in the background? But then when we go back to the verse, can you do this and that? And I'm just like.
So they get you punching in scenes.
Yeah. Eventually.
Like mid-song punching in scenes.
Eventually, we got it to that point, man. But I understand. My point is that after that, everything was easy.
Everything's easy.
Not even close to Parliament. I get it. But when you're thrown into something like that, your job is to make people sound great.
Yeah, man. That's it.
That's it. And so I knew that, and I had to, you know, all that fun stuff. Man.
And sometimes the bands aren't any good. Like, I do local stuff now because, you know, I got married. I mean, I'm not married anymore, but my kids are still here.
Sure, okay. Yeah.
So I can't really move around as much as I used to.
No.
But I do, like, local bands. I work at a local club, and sometimes these bands are terrible. So, like, my boss at the club calls me. I worked last night. Calls me the professional turd polisher.
So what other bands did you go on tour with besides Linkin Park? What was the other bands
that you... Some of them I won't name because I might need a job soon.
Oh, okay. No
worries. but I did a couple of Jägermeister tours. So those were like some of the first tours I did. Saliva, that's how I met Head PE. Saliva, Taproot, Breaking Benjamin, and Head PE. Oh, that was a great tour.
I love
it. It was a really good, really, really good tour. It's like all Newport sized places, like 2,000 seat theaters. Which is my favorite. I mean, I've done arenas and stuff, and I've done like the big outdoor sheds, like Ozfest couple years in a row. But I like the smaller places. Not small clubs, but like small like theater size, 2,000 seaters. That's where I kill at.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my main hunting ground.
Is it because of the sound? Is it easier to work sound in a smaller?
It's not that. It's just that like the big arenas, it's just, I don't know, the days are longer, you know, because you're usually carrying all your own PA. You're like with Claire Brothers or whoever you're with, whoever the big sound company is that the band hires. And it's like, it's mostly spent all day, like just build the stage.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of a long day. It's kind of like sucks. And it's kind of not as intimate and I don't know, something about it I just don't like. You know, I like the smaller clubs because I think it's probably because it's where I started from. You know?
Yeah.
Do you it's feel kinda like where you started from, you know?
It's a little bit more intimate, a little bit.
Yeah.
It is more intimate.
And, and that's my history, man. I worked in Newport for 5 years.
Yeah.
And even when I go back there still, it's like, I'm like, yeah, this is my house, you know?
Yeah. Hey, so, that makes sense, man. That makes total sense.
And I think I've been in every like 2,000 seater theater type probably in the country. It's because I've gone to places that have changed names and stuff.
Mm.
I walk in the door and I see people that I know, and I'm like, I've worked here before because I recognize that dude or that bouncer, or, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So like the crews are smaller, so it's like stagehands are small. I mean, smaller groups of stagehands, so it's like you get to know everybody. And you come back a year later and you see him, and it's like a family, you know?
Yeah, for sure, man.
You do arenas, it's like, you know, me again, like, it's, like, some cities are, what are they called, like, AFL-CIO.
Oh, unions, yeah, they're unions.
Yeah, some of the union houses are just like, God, I hate these guys. No offense to union guys, but you know what I mean? It's like...
It gets tricky, yeah.
There's
a union in town here. I did some work, man, I'm talking, like, before this is like early 90s.
Didn't you do Nelson or something like that?
Yeah, I did Nelson. I did Ozzy. I did Gloria Estefan. I did Queensryche. I did Queensryche.
Ah, love Queensryche.
Yeah, Dangerous Toys.
Wow.
They were around back then. Are they still around, Biggs? Dangerous Toys?
You know what? Yeah, I think, well, you know what? I know Jason McMaster, the singer. He has other side projects, but I'm not sure if they're,
that's awesome.
I mean, because of what happened right now with COVID, I'm pretty sure a lot of things were put on hold, but I think they were getting back together. I'm not sure.
Nice. That's awesome, man. Yeah, that'd be great to see them again, because they were cool. Yeah, man.
I saw them for The Cult back in the day.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. It was The Cult. What's the kid from my brain is going, I'm old, man.
I'm the same way too.
I know too. Oh, Bottom. It was The Cult, Dangerous Toys, and Bottom.
Yeah. That's a killer.
Third show, row, I was like, this is pretty awesome.
Oh, for sure, man.
I love The Cult, and they're amazing. It was Sonic Temple Tour.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were great.
Way back, yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
When I was working at the Special Events Center here, that's part of the university, there was a bunch of union guys. So like the rest of us were kind of hired, like extra hired hands, but all the riggers were union guys. You know, some of the other, of course the sound guys, some of them, they were local. There was this guy named, Mike Major. He's a local guy, but he's done a lot of stuff just like yourself. He's known and stuff. And, really sweet guy as well. Really cool guy. Taught me how to, you know, I was probably 18 or 19. Taught me how to roll a cable properly. And he took the time in the, you know, in the setup hour to do that, man. That's, I honor that stuff.
So important.
Because he's a cool guy, man. Shout out to him. But, the buddy that got me into this gig, his name's Joseph. This guy, man, Bob Beeks knows him. He's a friend of ours from high school. But he called me one day. He's like, hey, man, you want to work the KISS show? And I was like, sure. I showed up, but they already had all the people. And he was like, sorry, man, whatever. But what he told me at this show, because his knee is messed up, something was wrong with the stage. And it was really weird how this happened. His whole leg like fell through a hole in the stage. And at that same exact time, one of the rigger motors fell and it landed like right next to him, man. And you know, he was traumatized about that for years, because he's always talking about it to this day. But then he's like, hey man, you want to come do a Judas Priest show? And I'm like, yeah bro, but you know, I don't want to show up and you know not get in. And he was like, no, I already talked to the guy. Fernie's good. All right, so we did that show, and I ate their food. I can tell you that, because we are freaking, you know, it's an all. You're right. It's an
all day
in the stage and all that stuff.
Get your meal ticket. You go to catering.
Right. So we were walking down the hall, and then we see their dressing room. This was actually after the show. So my buddy's like, "Let's go in there, man." And I'm like, "Dude, I don't know, man. We just went in there and we ate whatever they had left over." So that's my claim to choose.
That's crazy. Hey, Michael, tell me about your band or your bands. How many bands have you been?
Oh, Jesus. Well, I was a hired gun for a long time, but the bands that I've toured with, as far as like my music, is this band called Christian, actually. I didn't name the band, weirdly enough. My lead singer did.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
He's like, he goes, well, you're the guy who writes all the songs, so we should call it, name it after you. I was like, are you sure? He's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, that's what we did. And I think I was like 19, 20, 21. And then me and that same singer started another band, because I got tired of having my name on it. So I think our drummer got married, so we got rid of the drummer and the bass player and got new rhythm section and changed the name to Kettle, K-E-T-T-L-E.
Yeah,
remember that?
About that.
Yeah. And that's the band that had the deal with Interscope and Epic and all that stuff. And A lot of weird stuff happened where, like, my singer wouldn't change some lyrics to a song, so they told me to fire him, and that's how I became a songwriter, actually. This is kind of weird. It's kind of weird how it all happened.
Yeah.
What happened was my band was falling apart during the label trying to sign us. Like, it was just, there was just things going on, man, and the label didn't like some of the lyrics, and the singer didn't like the A&R guy, and he was young and stupid and thought he'd have a million chances like this, and of course he's, like, working at a gas station now.
But, wow, that's crazy.
So the A&R guy says, get rid of all these guys, you don't need them. He goes, you write the songs, that's more important than anything. And I said, what should I focus on? And he said, this is going to be weird, so sit down. I said, okay. I said, what kind of song should I focus on? He goes, write country. I said, what? And I'm in the rock department. He's like, write country songs, man. I said, country songs? He said, dude, country artists don't write their own material. They buy them. You can make a lot of money.
That's true.
So that's kind of how I ended up doing what I'm doing now, kind of. Yeah, kind of how it started. I haven't been in a real band in a long time. Usually, I sub for people.
Sure. Can you tell us any of those songs, those country songs, of any artists that we know of?
A couple. That's where it gets tricky, because I'm a ghostwriter, so I signed a contract that says if I ever say that I wrote it, I have to give the money back. That's kind of what it says, like kind of paraphrasing.
Sure.
I'm not really allowed to say that I wrote certain songs, but I did write a song for I'm looking around like a weirdo. I'm like,
yeah, is it gonna pop up?
Because I haven't had any major hits, so it's not like if there's a lot of money to give back, you know. I made probably 10 grand off of one song, 15 off another, but still, like, that adds up, you know.
Absolutely.
I wrote a song called Sunday Morning for a guy named Uncle Cracker. I mean, Uncle Cracker and Jelly Roll.
Okay. Yeah.
This song's called Sunday Morning. I actually wrote that song in my hot tub. I was having a party at my house and the sun's coming up and I was like, am I know what time it is? And they were like, it's like 8 a.m. And I was like, y'all gotta go because it's Sunday morning, Saturday night's over.
Oh, that's cool.
And they're like, that's a great song. So the chorus is let me light a cigarette and drink me a beer, cause it's Sunday morning. And if my baby calls, tell her I ain't here, cause it's Sunday morning.
Oh, sweet, man.
Nice.
And actually what's weird about that is I sold that song while I was on tour. With and by the way, it's the first country song I ever wrote, and I sold it for 10 grand. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I must be the luckiest guy in the music business.
Yeah.
Hey, my dog's doing weird stuff. Stop it. I was on tour with Twisted. You know who that is? Twisted. They're like Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I was on tour with those guys, and it was Jelly Roll was with them, and so was Little White and somebody else. There's a bunch of groups on that tour. And I was asking Jelly Roll, because I thought he was really, really good rapper. He's really good. You know, big guy from Nashville, country twang. And he goes, I said, hey, man, who's your favorite rapper? And he goes, listen, it's country, man. I don't listen to hip-hop at all, really. And I was like, really? He said, yeah. He said, in fact, my next album's going to be a country album. I said, do you know anybody that writes country songs? And everybody starts laughing. He goes, what's so funny? And I said, they make fun of me because I write country songs. So let me hear something. So I actually grabbed this very laptop we're talking on right now. I grabbed this laptop out of my bunk and I played him Sunday morning.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
That's a cool story. That's a really cool story. That's
super cool. You never know who you're going to meet, dude. Ever. I was with a bunch of juggalos, bro. I sold a country song.
Wow. Yeah, that's what they're called, right? Isn't there their fan base called the Juggalos or something like that? Yeah, yeah.
First tour I never got laid on. Their fans, really? Yeah. Their fans are weird, dude.
Yeah, I could tell. Yeah.
Yeah. Face paint and wife beaters and it's far out, dude. I'm talking about the girls.
Wow. Oh. Okay, I don't know about that. It's that's scary.
Yeah.
That's interesting. What are you working on now?
What I'm working on now, I'm writing some new country songs for Jingle Punks. They're a publishing company in Nashville. Actually, they're from New York, but they have a thing in Nashville now. Mm-hmm. I have an office in Nashville now. And that's why I sold Sunday Morning, too, was Jingle Punks. And they're a publishing company. And I got some songs on deck with them right now. And working on learning how to play the pedal steel.
Nice. Oh yeah, yeah. I saw. Oh, nice. Thank you.
You saw that in my picture. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, man. That's.
I mean, cool. I can play Pro Tools good. I can cut bass parts. Sound great.
Sure.
But I want to get good at playing it live. So working on that. And what else? Oh, a friend of mine's got an album coming out that I'm doing production for, producing it. He's a great songwriter. Great songwriter. Guy's amazing. His name is Doug Sapira. Really
is
good.
He a solo artist or is it a
local guy, man? Local guy. He's amazing.
Oh, okay.
Amazing. We've been friends for a long time and. This album's been in the works for a long time. He's just, I don't know, it's kind of, artists are weird, man. People are weird, dude. Just takes them forever to I'm giving him free studio time and he's like, comes over maybe once a month.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's hard to motivate.
You know, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned that you did an album for an acoustic album. Who was that for?
Pete Way.
Oh my God, that's right. I know Victor had forwarded me some a message that you sent him when I saw Pete Way, because he's like one of my favorite bass players.
You shut up, dude. He's one of my best friends in the whole world. He just died recently.
I know. I have his book right here with me.
Shut up.
I'm not here next to me, but it's here. Yeah.
So listen, he was on tour with Fastway opening for Ozzy Osbourne. No, he's with
Wasted. No. That was Wasted.
Wasted. That's what I said. Yeah, Wasted. It was Wasted.
Yeah.
He's with Wasted and it's open for Ozzy, and he met some girl here in Columbus, Ohio. Her name is Joanna. She was a surgeon, smoking hot. And moved back here and married her.
Wow.
So he'd be like riding his bicycle down my street, and I'd be like, is that Pete Way? I'm serious. Totally serious. Dude, I have so many stories about me and that guy, because it took us a year to record that album. A year.
Which album was this?
Acoustic.
Oh, the acoustic.
It took a year to record. I'm playing guitar on like five songs.
Oh, no way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's out already, right?
Yeah, I mixed it. I engineered it, mastered it.
I got to hear it.
Yeah,
I'll hear it tonight.
It's pretty cool. I mean, there's one song that I cut in where he says, we did like 70 takes of the song. 70 takes.
Oh,
and I'm telling you, like, it took a year to record an acoustic record. It's just vocals and acoustic guitar.
Nah.
It's
why is it, man? I mean,
dude, he had this house. First of all, he had this big mansion on Neal Avenue. Neal Avenue is like, it's like a historical district in Columbus. All the houses are like Victorian houses.
Uh-huh.
And they're all expensive and they're huge. And he lived in this house on Neal Avenue. And he always had these huge parties. And people only drink champagne. Hey, man, I got a beer. You got any champagne, Michael? You got any champagne, mate?
Nah.
So he only drinks champagne. He's the funniest person I've ever met in my life. But he had these big parties in his house, man. And I remember the first time I went over there, because his manager was a friend of mine, and said, hey, man, Pete wants to do an album. And heard you were the guy to talk to. I was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
I was like, that's awesome. So I go over there. He answers the door. Again, the drugs thing, man. He answers the door. He's in his pajamas. And the street, it's a busy street. Like, cars are going by. They can see us. We're not that far away. And he's got this fucking plate with a ton of coke on it. He's got this black straw. He's holding the straw. And he's pointing. He's talking to me with the straw. This is no shit, man. He's got a $10 rock hanging out of one beak. And the other one's, like, drizzling. He's, like, dribbling. Like, he's snot rolling down his face.
Yeah.
And he said, so anyway, Marco, it's going to be an acoustic record, and we're going to record it in my house. I heard you got some mobile equipment. And I'm just kind of going like, what the hell's going on?
Oh.
And I'm looking at people driving by going,
like, what's that? I could imagine.
Because you have to understand, Pete's like 6'3". He's super like, he's a giant. And he's got his pajamas on, and he's got a plate with a ton of white powder on it. He looks pretty fucked up. It's pretty crazy. But anyway, the first session we had, I go in his house. Cause this is where his front porch. So the next day I come over with my gear. Come in his house. I saw he's got this big white grand piano with gold trim. And I don't know if you played piano, Pete. And he goes, well, tell it, Michael. It's decoration. And this is how the whole session went. I mean, he's cracking jokes. He's hysterically funny. I was friends with his girlfriend. I knew his girlfriend. Her name is Rashida, and he goes, a tall, skinny black chick, supermodel-looking girl. It's like, goddamn gorgeous. And he goes, so you know my girlfriend Rashida, the horse tooth cunt?
What the hell?
Yeah. Like, dude's pretty hysterical.
But That's the girl he married?
No. Like, he did marry her, but they ended up getting divorced.
And okay. Cool. Yeah.
But Joanna was the girl he married. She died from an overdose.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And Pete did a lot of heroin.
Oh yeah, his book. That's how, you know, he talks about his partying days. I heard from a lot of people that he's like the sweetest guy in rock and roll.
Oh my God, the nicest person you ever met in your life. Yeah. He would call my house. He's like, you talk to my wife. I'm like, who are you talking to? She's like, Pete. I'm like, are you talking to Pete? She goes, I don't know. He won't stop talking. Because he'd call him like, hello. Listen, my wife's. This is another funny thing. My wife's name was Lisa. Okay, They call my house and go, "Hello, Libby. Is Michael is Michael Christensen available?" Christensen. Right? She's like, "My name is Lisa." And he goes, "Well, that's what I said, isn't it? Libby. Hello, Libby. Love you. Can I speak with Michael Christensen?" So, swear to God, I have a copy of the Acoustic Animal album. I saved it because I knew it was, I thought it'd be worth some money someday. It says, "A special thanks to Michael and Libby Christensen."
Oh, my God. Nice.
True story.
Oh, I love that. I mean, I know we could probably do a whole episode of
On Pete. On Pete by himself.
We should do that one of these days.
I'm serious.
We have to.
I have a ton of stories.
I love Pete Way. His bass playing, it was just right in the pocket. But, I mean, it blended well with Michael Schenker.
You know what he told me about playing bass? I said, "Pete," because he was the primary songwriter. He wrote all their hits.
Right. Wow.
Pete wrote all the hits, like the big hit songs written by Pete and Phil Mogg. So Pete's like, I said, "Pete, how do I spin hit songs?" And he like, guitars have like the fret markers, the dots. It's called Connect the Dots, Michael. You just play the dots.
Like that's called Connect the Dots.
Fret markers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I guess
this is for those songs. All the songs are.
Yeah.
Seriously.
See, that's what we got to do, Beaks. We gotta just stick to the dots, man.
Exactly, and then you could come out with a crazy song, you know, killer song, you know.
I was gonna tell you though about that little snippet I left in the song. We did like 70, 80 takes of the song, and the one take that he nailed, he actually says at the beginning of the song, "All right, Michael, get this in one take," and he nails it.
Wow, that's super
cool. Wow,
which meant to me like he could have done this shit the whole time, dude.
Yeah.
He influenced a lot of bass players, a lot of musicians. Nikki Sixx was a big.
Oh my God! He says he's like, "I think Nikki Sixx stole my whole vibe, like the pinstripes and the polka dots."
Yes. Yeah.
Even the
bass, Thunderbird.
Yep. Even the bass, Thunderbird. Yep.
Wow.
Same thing with Steve Harris. Steve Harris was a huge
dude. Check this shit out. I was at an Iron Maiden show. I was Iron Maiden, Dio, and Motorhead. Okay. And I went with Pete, and the Horse Tooth Cut with Sheeta. Three of us went together. Oh. And Pete's dog, Princess. Admit, Princess, Pomeranian. Yes, I met Princess the Pomeranian. So anyway, we're backstage, and I kept running out front to watch the band because Pete didn't care about the music. He's there for the party, you know?
Yeah.
So I kept running out in front to watch the band, and I come back like between bands, and like I saw Steve Harris grouping the fuck out on Pete.
Oh, yeah.
Like he came running. He came running. We're sitting at a table with an umbrella. Backstage, like the little bar area where the bands hang out. And Steve Harris runs over and says, "Pete Way." He goes, "I started playing bass because of you." Pete's like, "What, man? Did you get any champagne?" True story. And then Lemmy, same thing. Lemmy came by, sat with us for like a half an hour. It was nuts, man. Like, it was crazy.
I wish I was there.
I have one more Pete story. I don't want to keep killing with them, but I got a bunch of them, man, because that's
been awesome.
I was the guy for 20 years, you know?
Yeah.
We have long history. So I'm working the Newport Music Hall. It's my second show. So I did George Clinton the first day. 2 days later, it was Slash's Snake Pit, okay?
Oh, nice.
And I got told my first day, like, don't talk to the rock stars. Don't ask them for autographs. Leave them alone. Don't take pictures. None of that. Leave them alone. They get bothered enough.
Yeah.
Sure. Got it. So I'm on stage. I'm micing the stage. I'm micing Marshall Amp, one of Slash's cabinets, 57, on stand. Somebody's saying, "Hey, dude. Hey, dude." I'm like, so I'm trying to turn around because my boss's office is in the balcony. He can see everything. He can see the stage from his office.
Wow.
I was like, I'm going to get fired if I talk to this guy. Dude. I'm like, "Yeah, what's up, man? What's your name, dude?" He's like, "Christian." Everybody calls me Christian, man. Michael Christian. He's like, "My name's Slash." I was like, "Yeah, I know." I'm trying to plug this mic in. I'm trying to plug this damn mic in. So he says, "Hey, man, can I ask you a question?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he says, "He had a sucker in his mouth. He had a sucker in his mouth." And he goes, "You want a blow pop?" I was like, "Sure. Sure, blow pop." So he reaches in his leather jacket, pulls out two. Okay, a cherry and a grape. It was like the SATs, man. I was like, He goes, which one? I'm like, Cherry. He goes, I knew you were cool, man. I knew you were cool.
That's awesome. That's a cool story.
It gets better. No, it gets better. Listen, so right when this happens, my cell phone rings. And I look at it, and it's freaking Pete Way. I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, here we go. Because every show he'd call me, because he knows everybody.
Yeah.
Hey, can I speak with Ricky Metlock from Lynyrd Skynyrd? I'm like, who is that? So Ricky's giving him the phone.
Yeah.
So he's like, hey, Michael, is Slash available? I'm like, actually, I'm talking to him right now, dude. I could get fired for this shit. And he goes, well, it's my mate. Can I speak with him? I'm like, dude, just give me a blow pop, dude. Like, I'm not supposed to be talking to this guy at all. My boss is in the office. He's looking right at me. He's like, well, no, tell him it's Pete. I'm like, hold on. I said, hey, Slash. He goes, yeah. I'm like, you heard the band UFO? He goes, oh, I love UFO. I was like, yeah, their bass player lives in town. He goes, is that Pete on your phone? I was like, yeah. He goes, give it to me. He took my phone. He was gone for an hour.
Wow, man.
So then at the end of the show, because Pete, he ends up getting Pete on the guest list. Pete comes to the show. He's hanging out on Monitor World with me while I'm doing monitors, you know. And then him and Slash are hanging out. And he talks Slash to come back to the house. Said, I'm recording the album. Michael Christian here is the engineer. And all the gear's in my house. Let's go back to my house and lay some guitar tracks down. Slash was super excited, but his tour manager was like, the bus call was at like midnight or something, so he couldn't leave. So
that was crazy, man.
That was my second day. That was my second day at work.
Yeah.
You're like, can I just pinch myself now? I mean,
come on. It was nuts. Like, I've never been starstruck since then because.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well. Yeah. You just got.
Right.
You just. It's wow. Almost like, it's almost like, I mean, what do you say after you do Parliament?
Yeah.
And then your next show,
Slash.
Slash gives you a
blow pop.
A blow pop.
And then he borrows your phone to talk to this dude.
And dude, this is back in the day when you were paying for minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was going, dude, my wife's going to kill me, dude. Like, he's been on my phone for an hour talking to Pete, you know?
I was like, couldn't you wait after 9?
I know, right? But seriously, I was.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Hey, so you know what? You mentioned also, and I want to bring this up with a lot of respect, man.
Yes, yes, yes. I know where you're going.
Yeah, it was a really tragic event, man. You know, this guy influenced a lot of bands, I think, without this band, and I'll mention who it is in just a second. There wouldn't be other bands. Like, there's some bands that really came out because of these guys. And I was actually, when I first heard these guys, I was on tour in Mexico. I used to tour in Mexico. And we were playing at this club, and they had this, like, huge video screens. And I'm setting up my drum set and all that. And I'm looking at, and then this, like, this band with balls is on stage, man. And they're playing these videos, and I mean, we're touring in Mexico. You know, Mexico is very updated. A lot of people don't realize how modern Mexico is. But, you know, we were on the road, dude. We weren't paying attention to what was going on with the bands. We were focused on our band, right? So we're doing our thing. And this band, and then and I'm like, what? Rewind that. Turn it on, right? Pantera, man.
Pantera.
Yeah. And man, it blew my face off, man. It was amazing. And here we are a few years later, man. They did their thing and all that. Let's talk about Dimebag.
Hey, man. I met him on Ozfest. I was working for a band who will remain nameless. It was weird, man, because he never forgot my name. And of course I can think of, I mean, I'm the only black guy on the tour with dreadlocks down in my ass and no, but he's always on a golf cart and he's always like, Christian, what's up backstage? And he's like, the nicest guy in the world, man.
Yeah.
Just super, super, super nice, man. And it was kind of weird. Cause like when we played the Players in here in Columbus, the big iron, big amphitheater. And a bunch of my friends were at the show. Cause you know, I know a bunch of boys in Columbus. I'm locally famous here.
Yeah.
And people are like, and Dimebag pulls up next to me in a golf cart and starts talking to me. And there's like, there's a barricade. And all my friends are back behind the barricade because I'm talking to him. I didn't see him pull up. I just heard my friend screaming. And I was like, what are my friends screaming? I look around and he's standing behind me. Dimebag, you know? He's got his Ace Frehley t-shirt on.
Nice.
Always. And they were like, you know him? I was like, well, kind of. I'm on the tour. I'm not on tour with them, but we're on the same tour. Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah. So it's kind of get to know people. And just always nice to me. Just super nice.
You know, that's
always sought me out. Like, if I was walking around backstage, he'd like walk over and start talking to me. It's crazy.
With a shot, I'm sure. Like a
sweet guy, just sweet guy, man. Yeah.
With a Jaeger shot, right? Black tooth. Right. Right.
Bob and I were talking about that earlier this, you know, just this afternoon. I said, hey man, what, you know, what's your history with Dimebag? What, you know, how much of a fan were you? And we were talking about that. And, you know, we both said that all the stories we've heard, particularly Biggs, cause he's more in the scene, that he was a sweet guy, man. Really cool guy.
Super nice guy, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. What happened with me with that situation? He's playing here in Columbus with Damage Plan. Right. And they were playing the Newport Music Hall. First of all, they were on tour with Ministry, okay? And I was doing the Ministry show at the Newport. And they were going to do the show together because they were on tour together. But they offered to do a headlining tour or a headlining show at this other venue in Columbus, about half the size of the Newport, about 800 seater, which I've also worked there too. I would do both places. Anyway, we do our load-in for Ministry. And when we get done doing our load-in, the owner of the Arosa calls me and says, hey, man, do you have any stagehands that I can borrow? Stagehands? Like, what's going on? He goes, David's playing over here, and I'm paying cash. I'm like, well, actually, I just cut, like, four of my stagehands. Let me talk to him real quick. I said, hey, anybody want to go to the Arosa, make some extra money? And they were like, yeah, sure. So two of my stagehands went over there. Actually, no, two of them went over there. Two of them were already working there. And so I had four of my stagehands that were already there, or that were working that show. I said, as long as you guys get back here for the out, we're good. And one of them didn't come back. His name was Aaron Hulk. His name was Stoney. We call him Stoney for obvious reasons. And he's always smoked out. But he's the guy that ran across the stage and tackled the gunman.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So it was crazy. Their stage manager, who was one of our stagehands, calls me right before Ministry's going on. Like we're doing Ministry's intro music. Like we just killed House Lights. Okay. I mixed two of the opening bands. They just killed House Lights. Their engineer's like muting channels. House music's on. I mean, their intro music is on. And my phone is going berserk, man. I'm like, what is going on? I'm trying to talk to the front house guy for Ministry and help him out. Like, hey, man, like, here's the, you know what I mean? Like, showing him.
Yeah. Yep.
And he's like, I said, give me 1 second. I answer my phone. I'm like, yo, man, what's up? It was my buddy John, stage manager at the Arosa. And he said, man, I think I just saw Dimebag get shot in the head, and I can't find Stoney. This place is going crazy. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, I swear to God, man, I think I just saw Dimebag get shot in the head. And I can't find Stoney, which is his roommate. His roommate was Stoney. I said, find out what's going on and call me back. So the opening band let me get on their bus so I could watch their satellite, so I could watch CNN. There's a helicopter above the Arosa. People are running like crazy. My buddy calls me back. I heard the gunshots in the background of the cop that shot the gunman.
Oh, wow.
I heard it on the phone. It's the weirdest thing. Weirdest thing in the world, man. And what ended up happening with me was my best friend was doing monitors over there, and there's a wall behind the monitor console. There's bullet holes in it. My other buddy, he got on the guest list that he brought backstage with him, grabbed him and pulled him out of the way because the guy shot Dimebag and then turned the gun on him. Oh, man. The monitor guy. And my buddy grabbed him and pulled him out of the way. So there's bullet holes in the wall. They're still there. I just mixed there maybe, 6 months ago before the COVID. I mixed there. Those holes are still in the wall, man. It's fucking weird, dude. It's hard going back in there. It's hard being in that place. But a lot of my friends were affected by that shit, man. And all my stage hands crashed in my house for like a week. Yeah. I took care of everybody because they were all, because guys that were there that saw it in person and live in color, they're still freaked out. So I mean the Stoney's girlfriend, I held her in my arms for 3 days. She's cried for 3 days. Wow. I just held her for 3 days, man. It's pretty tragic situation.
Yeah, because you would never imagine something like that happen at you know, with a band, you know, with any band or at a club.
And the way it affected the staff, the community, because we're all tight, man. Our audio engineers and our crews that run the city, everybody knows each other. Everybody's super, super tight, man. And it really had a huge impact on our local stage crews. I mean, I'm just thinking about it right now. I'm starting to get the shakes. Oh man,
I don't blame you. That's some pretty heavy duty stuff right there, man. I mean,
yeah, man. Like, when you send somebody over to do another gig, you'll expect them to come back.
Right.
You know? Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So we had a huge benefit for him, and we get together like once a year and hang out. Usually on the date that Aaron died, which is the same day that Dimebag died, which is he's a hero, man. The guy's a hero. Because a lot more people would have died than would for him.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Yeah.
And he's ex Marine. And what happened was he was standing outside the stage and he saw the Dimebag thing happen. And the guy emptied his clip, dropped it, and was going to grab another clip to put another clip in. This guy's ex Marine, so he saw it and said, "Oh, here's my chance." And ran over and tackled the guy.
Yeah.
While they're on the ground wrestling, he got the clip in and dumped it in his stomach.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, man. But dude, I'm serious. 20 more people could have died.
Sure.
If he hadn't done that.
He saved people's lives, man.
Saved people's lives, man.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, God bless your buddy, man.
Man. Shout out to Stoney, Aaron Hall.
Shout out to Stoney.
Yep.
Shout out to Stoney. Know you, bro, bud. Yeah, for sure, man.
And look, everybody around here knows, man. Everybody in the city knows who Stoney Hawk is.
No. Yeah. Yep. I forget what year was this.
2011, right? No. Eight.
I think it was
2008.
Yeah. Crazy.
I think it was December 11th, 2008.
Yeah. Yeah. It was nuts, man. It was crazy. And here's what happened at the Newport. Where I told the sound guy for ministry what was going on. He said, "Don't say anything to anybody, because if you do, what's his name? Ministry. Al will shut the whole show down. He won't perform.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
But I told the opening band guys, because I was on their bus watching the shit on the news. I was on their bus watching the news.
Yeah.
So somebody told him, so he didn't do it. They're supposed to do an encore. He didn't do the encore.
Yeah. I bet, man.
Yeah.
Hey, was Caesar already playing with Ministry at that time?
No. I think Caesar joined the band like maybe, God, you know what? I don't even know. Like 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Yeah, because I know Al lived here, man, in our town in El Paso. Yeah,
really?
For a number of years, right?
Yes, he did.
He stuff lived here over for a while. At Sonic Ranch, and then he picked up a guitarist from here, Caesar Soto, who's a great guy, and he's doing his thing. And he's still playing with him, but wow, that's crazy, man. You know what? Just hearing that story, man, just really kind of, man, you feel that, you know, you feel.
Yeah, man.
You're absolutely right. You know, the community of sound guys, engineers, stage hands, buddies that hang out, that help out once in a while, carry some mic stands and all that stuff. You become close knit, and you
it's a family, dude.
What, it sure is. I'll tell you what, man. In my experience in music, and it might be different, and this is not to criticize anybody, but I found it really interesting, man. You know, growing up in the rock and roll world with bands, with Biggs and other people, it's all for one for all, right? You're in the band, you're part of the crew, like you take care of each other, man. And one guy goes down, everybody goes down, and that's just how it is. When I got back from being on tour, my last tour, you know, anything special that I did in music was in Mexico, came back. Then I started getting into Latin music, playing salsa, merengue, cumbia, and stuff like that. What I found was that a lot of those guys, great players, man. I played with some really good players, Cuban guys, Dominicans, and badass percussionists. But they're very individualistic. A lot of them, they're very hired guns type of guys, which is cool. I just wasn't used to that. I was used to like, this is our band, bro. This is, you know, you know exactly, bro. You know,
so, yeah, man.
Yeah.
It's like a gang, dude.
It's like a gang for sure.
It's like a gang, man.
So it took me a while to understand that whole scenario, because I'd show up to a gig and we had another percussionist. And I'm like, hey, what happened to so-and-so? Oh, dude, he's playing with so-and-so tonight. And I'm like, what the hell, bro? He's our guy, man.
Yeah.
He's playing with, you know, just down the street. It's not like he went on tour with anybody. It's like, what the hell? So it took me a while. But you know what? For me, man, when I started playing salsa piano, a buddy of mine, he's like, hey, man, this buddy of mine, he needs a piano player. And I'm like, bro, it's been years, but I'll give it a shot. So I show up, man, to the first rehearsal. And there's like 15, you know, salsa bands, bro, 15 guys, you know, 3 percussionists, 4 horns, you know, bass player, a couple of singers, a couple of dancers on the side.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
They kick in, bro. Well, the singer tells me, the leader, he's like, here's the music. And I'm like, I haven't read music since high school, bro, but I'm a shot, right? He's like, you'll be fine. And I'm like, all right, dude, whatever. They kick in, bro. And I've told Beegs the story because it's funny, but it's embarrassing, but it's funny. I froze, man. Because he counts it off, and then everybody, the horns come in strong, and I'm like, whoa. You know what I did, man? I was like, oh, dude, I think something's wrong with my amp, bro. I don't know.
And now you know when somebody does that, you know that.
Yeah, you know they forgot the song.
Dude,
they got through the first song, and then he's like, well, what's going on, bro? You all right? And I'm like, my amp, bro. And I'm like hitting the keyboard, trying to turn on. I did that the whole rehearsal, man. But then he says, cool, bro. We have a wedding on Sunday. And I'm like, bro, I can't even. He's like, no, you'll be good, bro. You'll be good. So I showed up to the wedding, dude. And I managed to pull off a few chords, faked most of the night, you know, being all like, oh, I don't know what's going on with my plugs, bro. So it was a lot of fun, bro. But my point is that it's a very gun for hire type of thing. Coming back to the Dimebag thing, when somebody gets hurt in your crew, in your group, it's tough. And something like that, bro.
It's traumatizing.
Man. It's trauma, bro.
Dude, we are inextricably linked from that day on.
Yeah.
I mean, we get together like once a year.
Yeah.
Just to reminisce on stuff, man.
And
in fact, the Newport Music Hall just had their, if you go on YouTube, they have, it's their 50th anniversary. It's like a documentary. Mm-hmm. And we're all pissed off that they didn't interview any of us.
Yeah.
Really? Like, they interviewed like a bunch of artists that played there, like AC/DC and BB King and, you know, Judas Priest and, you know, Rob Halford. All these people that have, and Ted Nugent, everybody that's played there over the years.
Yeah.
And that love the Newport Music Hall. Not one interview with the crew.
Yeah.
Or any of the stage hands that like built that place. None of the security guys. None of the bar.
Whenever so we weird. Do shows. Yeah, when we do shows, I always at the end of the night, I always go to the sound guy or stage hands, I always say thank you. That's the most important thing, because people don't understand how it takes a lot of work, you know?
Yeah, and you know how important that is?
Uh-huh.
Very important that you do that, man.
Yeah, I do. I all the time, if you know, when I'm on tour or when before all this happened, that's after the show, I go, thank you so much, man. Thank you so much.
You taught me that too, man, just from being the house guy, being shit on so many times, man, like tours. Sure. As soon as I started touring, I was like, dude, thank you. You're awesome. You're great. You guys are fantastic. Swag them up with gear.
Yeah.
You know, free t-shirt, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, dude, there was, I'm not scared to say this because I'll never work for them, but Nickelback played the show, and their tour manager was such a prick that the Newport has this big sliding back door that leads to an alley. It's just an alley. It's like cars are right there.
Mm.
Usually the tour bus parks there, and we unload the trucks and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It's a big sliding back door. It's right behind the stage curtain. And, we opened the door and pushed all their gear out, all their road cases out in the alley. And said, load your own shit.
Really?
Yeah, man. And then closed the door and locked it.
Whoa. What happened, man? What what took it to that level?
I can't remember exactly what happened that day, man, but there's one situation with I forget who it was, man. See, it's hard. It's a lot, so many bands, but this one guy gets off his tour bus and says, "Where's your stagehands at?" And I said, they're up in the crew room. He goes, "Go get them." I said, "Hey, everybody come down." He said, "Get your stagehands down there and dump that fucking truck." And I was like, all right, wow. Man. I said, okay, wow. Dude. I said, "Hey, all you guys go home with pay." I said, "Now, dump your own truck, bitch."
Ooh. Really?
Yeah.
See, well, yeah.
I got fired for that one. Seriously, that's how I got fired.
I bet, man.
But there's this big we had a new GM then, so it really wasn't. I mean, a year, like 6 months ago, I could have done that, but the new GM was kind of like not really down for that kind of stuff. But the old GM had a big sign above his desk and said, "F the crew. They'll be gone tomorrow. Your crew will be here tomorrow." No. It said F the tour.
Yeah.
F the tour. Because your crew will be here tomorrow and they'll be gone.
Yeah.
So who you gonna look out for? You gonna look out for the band or look out for your crew? Look out for your crew.
That's right. That's absolutely
bands new. Bands new, you can't come in Newport and talk shit, dude. We'll shut you down.
Well, yeah.
You're in my house, dude.
That's good. That's
so good. Remember, kids, when you're on tour,
yes,
to the stage,
yes,
an asshole.
Don't be an asshole.
And you know who gets, if you're touring, man, this goes out for the young bands, man. I know you guys are kicking ass and doing your thing, but when you're on tour, bro, and your buddy says, "Hey, man, I'll go with you guys and I'll help you guys carry shit or whatever," guess who gets the bed at the hotel, man? Like, your crew gets the bed, man. You,
true story.
Van, it's hard work, man.
On the floor,
it's very
bro.
Hard work.
You sleep in the van. Let these guys get some rest, bro. They're making you sound good. They're making you look good. At the end of the day, you know, they're pulling all the work for you, man.
And the thing is, man, I got friends from tours that the crew from Slayer. Oh man, some of the nicest guys I've ever met. You know, and I'm friends with those guys for till to this day. And if I see them, I was in San Francisco, like visiting a girlfriend, and I saw Slayer's playing. And I was like, I can get us in. I got us in, and they're like, "Christian." And it's like, dude, I've seen these guys in 10 years.
Yeah,
you know, but
it's family.
But the guys that are cool, you never forget them.
Yeah.
The tours that are assholes, dude, they're probably not around anymore.
Yeah. That's common, yeah. Man. You know, that gig I was telling you about where it was like, I think like 6 or 7 singers. That was rough because one of the guys in the band, I think he was the guitarist, he wanted me to pan him. He's like, "Dude, when I walk from the right side of the stage to the left side, pan me on the monitors, bro, so I can hear myself on the wedges." And I'm like, "Bro, what are you talking about?" Maybe it's possible. I don't know, bro. But I ain't going to do that. You know what I'm saying? It's like, come on, bro. Chill, bro. That's what you got.
You're doing too much.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. You know, he ended up actually leaving that band. But I'll tell you this, man. I did learn a lot from that band. And I actually had guys that came in and taught me that board. It was a Yamaha, I forget.
Dude. MX. Series or
Evan MS7 MS5 something
yeah.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of buddies of mine, Lencho, he's a great sound guy as well. I was like, "Dude, I need your help, bro." And then this other guy named Vic, you know, I mean, I had the gig, I just wasn't familiar with the board on the spot, bro. You know, had I had some time to kind of figure it out and go know what goes where, no problem. But yeah, it was a tough learning curve for sure.
I think that's why we were talking earlier about like the smaller venues, like the club size or the theater size. I think that's why I like those, because I don't know, man. I'll get bored, man. And I think like going into a new venue with new gear, because we're not carrying, right. And a new console. And I asked the sound guy, like, "Where's this knob at?" Like, yeah. I get a tutorial from the house guy.
Yeah.
I kind of got off on that. You know what I mean? I kind of like that. Like when I was doing arenas, you know, we carried all our equipment. It was the same gear every night, same mics every night. You press recall. It's like, am I really mixing?
Yeah, exactly, man.
Am I really mixing?
And, you know, we'll talk about mixing for a second, because I know for me, a lot of guys don't do this. I don't know in your area, but in my area, usually everything's run mono. Maybe I'm just crazy. Things are run mono around here. And I like to pan keys, man. I like to pan Toms, I like to get that ping pong going, bro, and all that stuff. A lot of the guys in the area don't really do that for whatever reason. How is that for in your area, man?
Are you everything I do is stereo, man.
Yeah.
And every video I worked at is stereo. And it was like that before I walked in the door.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it was already set up. But I see it. That's weird you say that, because a lot of touring guys, if we have a bigger act come in and their front house guy, he's like, it's mono, right? I'm like, no. So it's like they assume it is. That's weird.
Right, right.
I never thought about it, but now that you mention it, yeah. I've heard that a lot.
Yeah.
Might be a Midwest thing, stereo. I don't know, man. Who knows?
Hey, man, before we go, Bob, you have any other questions for Mike?
No. I don't. I mean, it was great.
You're still thinking about the bass player, right?
Yeah. We got to do a show with that.
A whole one. I mean, dude, I have crazy, crazy stories.
Oh, I love. Yeah, we have to. But if we ever go into to your town, I hope that you get to run sound for us. You know,
that'd be awesome.
Look out for Sledhammer. That's the name of my band.
I see it. I'm looking at it.
Yeah. So if we ever go down there, you know, I'm gonna ask for you.
Nice. I'm the best. Just ask me.
I'll just say, who's the best?
I do get a lot of gigs around here, man. People request me, so it's,
yeah, for sure.
Nice. Okay.
I'm very blessed for that.
Awesome.
Hey, man, before we go, I want to just see if you could, for those up and coming sound engineers, what advice do you have for them?
Trust your ears. But if you trust your ears, you gotta listen to good music. Listen to stuff that's recorded well. And if you do that, you can trust your ears. Trust them.
Would you say that part of your job is to get the band to sound as close as to the record as possible, or do you go for a more of a live acoustic, not acoustic guitar, but like, you know, organic feel? What do you go for as an engineer?
For instance, I did cover band last night, cover band, and they did a Billy Idol song, Rebel Yell.
Yeah.
It's got all the delays in it. I put the delays in it because I want it to sound like the record.
Right.
And the lead singer got to say, she goes, that was awesome. Like, why did you think it was okay to do that? And I said, well, because it sounded weird without it. Because yeah. I know that song, and without that part, it sounds weird to me.
Sure.
And if I go to other clubs, I see some cover band, I go, that's not right. Something's not right. Because some bands play stuff in a different key. You know what I mean? It's like, irritates me. I try to get as close to the source material as I can.
Are you guys opening up now a little bit? Or how
we have to close by 10:30 or 11 o'clock.
Okay.
Yeah. No, you can drink. You can the bar closes at 10. You can drink till 11. So what happens is at like 9:55, people buy like buckets of beers and like trays of shots. Yeah. They drink till 11, but the band has to stop by 11 o'clock. Yeah. Places to be closed by 11, but you can't serve alcohol after 10.
Is it like 50% capacity or what? Or is it like
60? You can do like 60.
60.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Which means nobody's paying as good as they used to. They're not paying bands once they used to. So a lot of bands aren't playing. A lot of guys aren't working. I've cut my rate. You know.
Sure.
Yeah. I had to.
Yeah.
I had to do it. I wouldn't work.
All right.
Now, thank God I have School of Rock.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm glad you brought that up. Tell us about that. You've been there what? A couple years now?
I've been there. It was a year and. It's August. A year in August.
Yeah. Now, is that School of Rock is a franchise or is that your?
Yeah, it's a franchise, man.
Okay. Yeah. You're the director of the school there.
Music director, yeah.
Nice, man.
I hire all the instructors. I set the curriculum. I pick the songs. It's pretty badass, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen your band, all the kids and stuff.
Oh, my God. I have some assassins.
Yeah.
So I have an 8-year-old. Remember the name. His name is Eddie Gauthier. Golfer. He's 8 years old. He's been playing guitar for 6 months. He's an assassin. Trust me, you will hear his name. He's so good, dude. But yeah, it saved my life, man, because otherwise I'd be, well, especially with the COVID thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be out of a job.
Yeah, for sure.
All the tours dried up. And it's kind of this, we're doing the Zoom lessons, which saved me. And now we're open again. We opened in June. And, we have a show in a couple weeks.
So what do you think for next year? Do you think there's going to be any tours next year? Or do you hear anything?
Well, I know one thing. My owner is kind of glad there's not tours, because otherwise he's like, he goes, you're gonna quit, aren't you? And I'm like, so when we get a new tour, if I get a tour come up, I might quit. But but he's kind of glad that there's no tour right now. So he has me working for him.
So you have any thoughts? Do you think you know?
I don't know, man. I really don't know. I'm not banking on it. That's one thing I do know. I'm not gonna base my budget on it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary.
For sure.
Man, in fact, it's real quick with Pete Way again. That's kind of what happened to him. He'd been sober for a while. Started drinking again because he wasn't touring. Mm. He was depressed.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I talked to his wife. She said he was sitting around the house drinking a bottle a day just because he was bored and he was depressed because he wasn't on the road.
Yeah.
Because he had a huge tour booked.
Right, he was going to go on the road, right? Yeah. With his own, yep. I mean, Pete not Way wasted,
band.
Right?
Pete Way Band.
Just a Pete Way Band.
Yeah.
Okay.
All the shows were booked.
Do you know who else was in the band?
Nobody I knew.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it was all booked and then it all fell apart and he's kind of like got really depressed and started drinking again. She said he'd drink a bottle of tequila a day. And what happened was he fell over a railing and his like a staircase. You know, the railing, staircase was like that. But he fell over the railing. He didn't fall down the steps. He fell over the railing onto the steps.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah. And he broke some ribs and he was pretty fucked up, massive concussion. And he was in a coma for a while. And while they were doing tests, they found his liver was all fucked up. And yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah.
But it's really because of the whole COVID thing, man. Without his tour, he was doing what he loved. He was back to some bad habits.
And before we end, I mean, I know you, were you, as a guitar player, were you an Eddie Van Halen fan by any chance?
Somewhat. I mean, I respect him, but I'm not one of the guys that I learned all the songs, you know?
Right.
But they're definitely major respect. I mean, I've seen him a couple times live. Yeah. So I paid to see him.
Yeah, for sure.
but I'm not the biggest Eddie Van Halen fan in the world.
Oh.
I mean, I'm not a huge, oh my God, he's so great. I'm like, yeah, he's good. He's awesome. Changed the game for sure.
He did.
Changed the game. Can't take it away from me.
Oh, yeah. What about Nuno Betancourt?
God bless. What's that?
Nuno Betancourt.
Oh, amazing.
Wow.
Forget about it. Yeah. Why, did he die?
No. let's not spread rumors there, you know.
Oh, man.
Let's not spread any rumors. Right. You know, they're going to hear this like, did you hear?
No, Nuno's awesome. Incredible, yeah.
Yeah. Ever did sound for those guys, Extreme?
No, man, I never did.
No. You know what, actually?
I did Steve Vai twice, go ahead.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Cool stories there with Steve Vai?
Dude, he smokes a lot of weed, man.
Yeah.
Smokes a lot of weed. Like a lot.
Sure, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see
that.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
You know,
He peed in one of our trash cans. I was like, dude, here's the bathroom key. And he goes, no, I'm good. He's peed in the trash. I'm like, dude. He was like right beside me. I was doing monitors.
That's hilarious.
I'm good right here, bro. He said, man, I really got to pee. And I was like, bathroom's right there, man. Here's the key. He's like, no, trash can, start peeing.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, great guitar player.
Dude, look at your dick, bro.
Yeah.
Like, keep that over there, man. He's a super nice guy. Steve Vai, super nice guy.
Nice.
Biggs, Extreme, what year was Extreme that we caught Extreme Biggs? And it was...
This was 90s. I think maybe 1991. It was Extreme with Saigon Kick.
Yeah.
Ooh, Saigon Kick.
That's one of our favorite bands.
Love is on the way.
Yeah, that was our song. Well, I mean, it wasn't our song, but you know what I'm saying? We didn't sit down to, you know, sing to each other. But
it was a good time because, you know, speaking of sound, bro, that was one of the best sounding shows I've ever been to, man. Extreme.
Oh, yeah.
And Saigon.
Really?
Crisp, clean. It wasn't an arena. It was like in a, well, not.
It was yeah. In a Pan Am.
Yeah.
New Mexico.
Crisp, clean. Drums didn't sound like boxes. I mean, it was really nice. That's what kind of sparked me to like, man, you got to get into that.
Yeah, man. It's like being a wizard.
Yeah,
I've noticed that a lot of the shows lately. I mean, like, I went the last show I went to go see was Kiss and David Lee Roth. This was before COVID, and the sound was incredible. I mean, you didn't even have to use, you know, earplugs or anything. I mean, you could hear everything, yeah. And I mean, yeah. And the volume, it was in like torture. It was just perfect.
Yeah. I try to mix like that. Like, if you can't hear the person next to you speaking, trying to tell you something, then it's too loud, man.
Yeah, it's a bit too loud. Yeah.
It's too loud. I did
depending on the band too, right? I'm sure like Motorhead back in the day, they're like, we're gonna crank it up to 12.
Okay. But I did sound for Queensryche played the Newport, and they had their own front of house guy, and that guy, whoever that guy was, freaking amazing. I mean, I swear to God, if I had mic'd the stage myself, they were doing an Operation Mindcrime in its entirety. Nice. Front to back.
Wow.
And I swear to God, it was the recording. If I had mic'd the stage myself, if I had mic'd every drum myself, I swear to God it was recording.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, Jesus Christ. I mean, it sounds so much like the record.
Yeah.
And there's only one other show that I think topped that was Foo Fighters. The company that owned the Newport has another venue called Promo West Pavilion. It's like twice as big. They built that one. And it's indoor outdoor. So stage kind of swivels where you can face the inside, you can turn around and face the outside. And Foo Fighters played there, and I was like, I missed the openers. I missed like whoever was opening. I can't remember who it was because it wasn't that good compared to the Foo Fighters. They sounded so clean. I was like, who the fuck are you, dude? Like, where have you worked? How come I don't know you? You know, it was amazing.
Nice. So.
Hey man, well, I know we keep saying one last question, but
I know.
For up and coming bands, man, what should they be doing that they're not doing?
Solos, guitar solos.
Okay.
For crying out loud, bring them back.
Yeah.
Bring back the guitar solo, man. What happened?
Yeah.
What's going on with these kids?
True.
That's my one beef, man. Can I have some guitar solos, please? Yeah. You know, I was out with Papa Roach, you know, and I was like, where's all the solos? There's no guitar solos. You know, all great riffs. You know, like Linkin Park, when they were out rocking, no guitar solos.
Yeah, that was a period of time when nobody was doing solos. Even Metallica, one of the albums, they didn't do any solos. You know, it was a trend.
Yeah. Make it cool again.
Yeah,
for sure. Mike, you're the man. I appreciate you, brother. I love you.
Hey, I love you too, buddy. Thank you for having me, man.
It was nice meeting you. It was awesome. High five.
We gotta do this again.
Absolutely. Yeah,
definitely. Definitely. Right, thank you so much.
All right, guys. Thank you.
God bless.
Thank you.